Welcome back to CIOs and Bowties, a great interview with Paul Chai, Director of Investments at the KSU Kansas State University Foundation. In the previous segment, we were speaking about Paul's transition from asset management to the endowment world and how the investment horizon actually extends quite significantly. But Paul, what I found very interesting in reading some of your background material is you cite the use of artificial intelligence in your process. Specifically, one that caught my eye was for operational due diligence, you've come across some, I guess, law firms that are actually using AI to scan, I guess, documents, maybe ADVs, et cetera, at a fraction of the cost, essentially, of a person doing it at probably a much more efficient way. Can you tell us a little bit about the overall use of AI at KSU?
Sure. I'm ashamed to say that we actually don't use a whole lot of AI. We have been contacted by a few firms that I think for in terms of AI, we obviously have investments in venture firms that are focused on enhancing and advancing in artificial intelligence technologies. But internally, I would say that we have been contacted by firms that offer, like you mentioned, legal reviews of fund offering documents by bots at a lower cost. However, currently, the way we do things is we try to read legal reviews and conduct all the due diligence internally through myself as well as the chief investment officer. Okay. And we have not considered that offering, but certainly we were very much intrigued by the possibility offered by these type of advancements in the recent years. We certainly have not seen that in even as close as 5 to 10 years ago.
Right. Okay. All right. So I picked up the wrong thread there, but let's go to another thread, which I think is relevant. You speak about automated models, citing a quote here, which are provide more robust allocation decisions and execution process than peers. Hopefully I'm right on that. Do you have any kind of automation that you guys are using?
Yes. So from our standpoint, we have a smaller team relative to most of our peers, whether you look at the Big 12 conference or most of the endowment, larger 500 million above endowment funds in general. So we do have a need to be efficient on what we do in managing the portfolio. So we have a pretty big IT department here within the foundation that supports all functions, including fundraising efforts and others. So with their support, as well as we have also utilized help we can find from campus. We have worked with some of the professors in various departments. We were able to build semi-automated reports, both for our internal risk reviews. We have purchased a few softwares, obviously, like Bloomberg or eVestment, but from Bloomberg and eVestment, how to sort of integrate these systems and to generate reports internally seamlessly without too much human intervention. These are the type of reports that we have been able to produce. We have also internally built a couple models to help us with capital planning and projections. One we have built was sort of a private capital forecasting model where we tried to look at the distributions from existing private capital positions, potential capital calls with some of the new fund managers we have committed to, as well as comparing that to our policy benchmark to see what the discrepancies are and where we may have additional capacities to allocate to new general partners. So some of these are just examples. We also have built our own internal attribution models to evaluate performance attributions at the end of each quarter. I think we look at some of the solutions from in the market, but for our unique needs, I think we found it still more efficient to build our own reports and our own models to track specific things.
Okay, that's super interesting. So look, that's the benefit of having a large educational institution behind you. There's deep resources that you can tap. I know that you are a mentor to some I'll call them kids, but some students as well. So that's great. That's great that you got those resources. You mentioned the policy benchmark. And so let's step into that, okay? So this is interesting, and folks, this is out on their website. It's publicly disclosed. And this is the way I think of it. There's a bit of a pie chart there which explains public equities global being 42%, private capital, which I'm thinking is going to be private equity, but you can correct me, is 21%. So let's just round it off and call that a 60% allocation to equity-like instruments. There's a 10% allocation to cash and bonds. So obviously you guys are really concerned around fixed income, I imagine. Diversifiers would be perhaps hedge funds or absolute return funds, 7%. Real estate commodities in tips, 20%. So I know I've gone through that pretty quick, but essentially if you do the math, what you've got here is a 60% equity-like portfolio and a 40%, I wouldn't say fixed, but a 40% other type portfolio that's, I guess, seeking to generate yield and a bit of protection as well. So Paul, here's my question, okay, because this is what I found really interesting. From the literature I read about KSU, you have a lower private equity allocation compared to other endowments. Can you speak a little bit about that and why is that so? And, you know, just give us a bit of a synopsis because I do find that interesting.
Sure. So even though, as we mentioned previously, that the school has been established very early in 1863, we were a little bit late in establishing an endowment fund for the school, as it was not until year 1944 when the fund was actually established with the first gift. So for a school at our size with more than 20,000 students and many more faculties, the whole school as well as everybody in the organization is fully aware of the need for our endowment fund to be bigger than its current size of $700 million, roughly, I think $613 million in the permanent vehicle and another $100 million in the operational liquid vehicle.
Okay.
So in order for us to grow the endowment fund, we actually do, there are actually only two ways for us to grow, either externally through donations and gifts made to the school or through managing the portfolio to make investment returns. So to do both, we need to invest to fund these efforts. And every year in terms of distributions for the fund itself, every year we distribute about 4.5% of our endowment fund's market value to the school. And then in order to fund efforts for us to quickly grow our endowment fund, we spent another 1.6% or so to support fundraising functions as well as to support our expenses to manage the endowment fund. So with that said, that 6% or 6.1% of spending is a little bit higher in terms of spend rate compared to most of our peers. Because of a higher spending rate, we also have a slightly higher need for more liquidity, simply because we have to come up with the liquidity in order to make these distributions and as well as the spendings for us to fund these operations. So with that said, that plays a natural constraint in terms of liquidity. So I think we currently have a little bit of a lower cap in terms of how much we can expose our portfolio to private investments. So unlike a school in an Ivy League that may have 80%, 90% in alternative investments, I think for us at the moment, alternative investment probably make up about 35% of the portfolio.
Okay. All right. So that sets this up well. And I'm going to get a little tough with you now, Paul.
Sure.
So I hope you can handle it. But I think you've been through 2008, so this will be nothing. Listen, 8.16% annualized return is kind of high, I would say. And you've got a high spending rate. Just looking at the returns of it, you know, even 20-year, 10-year period, I don't think it's ever been achieved, the 8.1%. And let me throw in this, that, and again, I'm citing something you may have said, is how do you probably believe we're in a late cycle environment now with lower return expectations going forward. So I'm curious about, you know, how you, this 8% may be tough to make in a normal market. It's going to be even tougher going forward, and you've got a liquidity constraint. How are you guys just going to see your way through this?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a great question. And I fully agree with you on the absolute return objective of 8.16% being a pretty high hurdle. I would say that for our endowment fund, obviously, I think we have achieved the 8% objective from time to time. Really depends on what time horizon you look at the fund's performance. However, I think over a longer course of history, we have not been able to get to the 8%. We have primarily grown the fund through generous donations from external gifts so far. So I would say in terms of considerations of late cycle portfolio management, again, we try to focus our investment horizon on an even longer term. So we are not focused on the next 3 to 5 years where we may see our economic growth come to a halt or maybe see some risk for recession. But we really want to focus on an even longer term. And looking at this longer term of 10 to 15 years, we're trying to focus on identifying mispriced securities and areas where you have valuation dislocations. So just to give you some example on some of the things we have been looking at, we definitely want to avoid buying things on the expensive side, and we want to look for things that are cheaper. So relatively speaking, if you look at, for example, emerging market equity versus U.S., even international developed market equity versus the U.S., there is a price gap which has been trending up, and it has been as big as it has ever been, which at some point we feel that there may be a chance for normalization and for that trend to reverse. Similarly, if you look at, for example, large cap versus small cap, if you look at the emerging market equity, large cap versus emerging market small cap, you see that there's also a valuation discrepancy, and where emerging market small cap is even more undervalued versus, for example, U.S. small cap. Mm-hmm. So some of these things we look at distress opportunities in energy. Obviously, energy is a bad name. A lot of people are trying to stay away from it. But even with that, a lot of the energy managers, general partners we are working with, they are seeing opportunities that has been as good as ever in their entire career.
Sure.
With great assets and acreages where they can buy it cheap with significant cash flow yields. So these are the type of things that we try to focus on, to look at where are we seeing opportunities that are cheaper. Second thing we try to look at is investments with a higher realized cash yield. So we have been looking at direct lending strategies. Obviously, that's sort of the vague, the vogue on vogue nowadays, with a lot of people looking at them. There's a lot of crowding within the space. But we have been focusing on looking at more niche space. We try to look at managers where we think have a bit of a competitive edge. So, for example, I think in aircraft lending space, there may be a handful of players because of the higher hurdle for most people to enter that direct lending space. We have also looked at some of our holdings in commercial real estates that have historically generated good cash on cash yields, and we try to hold on to them, and we try to look into real estate investments where maybe abroad that can also generate similar type of yields comparable to the U.S. but are currently at a valuation discount. And finally, we try to maintain just the same discipline, portfolio diversification, and try to stay within our approved strategic asset allocation range. That's a discipline we have to maintain to make sure that we're not subject to any type of significant idiosyncratic risk that can really put our track record off.
Right. Okay. I should note, and this is not a question, just note for the audience, the strategic asset allocation, I believe, is developed from time to time, from what I could read, and it's done with an outside consultant. Is that correct?
It is. It is. Okay. And that current asset allocation target is exactly the one you have just mentioned,
yep.
Where it's roughly 60% in public and private equities.
Yeah. No, I like it. I think it's very elegant. I'd say a few things. You guys are still relatively small in the endowment world, and that could actually work to your benefit because your allocations can be smaller and you can access more niche more niche type return streams. So that's good. But listen, I'm not going to let you off the hook straight away. You've got a tough job ahead of you. You're not alone. certainly there's a lot of other institutions in a similar position where the bogey is pretty high. So we're going to take one more break, Paul, and when we're going to come back, I'm going to put your feet to the fire one more time and just see how you're going to achieve your goals. So stay with us, guys.